He only knew that he always had a vague feeling of not belonging, of being different, of not feeling it. He couldn't remember any singular event in his childhood that had happened to bring on this feeling. It just seemed to be always present. He became accustomed to it. It didn't really bother him. It was just something he was aware of, and he didn't try to examine it or delve into it very deeply. He said it was a feeling of not being in touch with this place, but it didn't really seem to cause him any problems. He was afraid of emotions and could not openly express himself in that way. Many things confused him, especially human behavior. He couldn't understand why people behaved the way they did, why they said the things they did, why they were able to hurt each other as though it was nothing to them. All through high school he tried many times to fit in, to act the way the others did, to behave in the same manner. But inside he knew it was only pretense, only a facade. He just couldn't be like them, and the attempts only made things worse. He became more confused than ever. He dated girls, but didn't allow any of them to get very close to him. He feared emotional involvement. His relationships during that time and later were very superficial. I believe he was afraid of being hurt if he made any type of commitment. 82. The keepers of the garden. After graduating from high school, the extent of his education, he moved to Kansas City for a time and then joined the Navy, mostly for the experience of being on his own. He enjoyed these different experiences, and the vague feelings were pushed to the background and did not bother him during that time period. The pulls of home were very strong, and he always returned to the house he had grown up in. He always had a feeling of isolation when he was away for very long. The climax of his life came when he was 22 years old and he had moved to California to live with his sister. About that time he began to experience strange dreams and out-of-the-body trips. He had read of such things but had never discussed them with anyone. He believes now that things might have been different if he had had someone during those days to share these things with. Someone to tell him that these experiences were not unusual but were shared by many others. One of his first out-of-body trips occurred spontaneously one afternoon while he was trying to take a nap. With a strange tug he came out of his body and found himself floating upward out of the bed. He then drifted up through the ceiling and through the apartment above. He explained that the experience had a strange texture, a grainy feeling like being in water with sand stirred up. Then inexplicably he found himself in the presence of a woman who was reciting something. He said, "It was like a litany or a history. It was the history of my soul, my existence or existences. And of it all, the only thing I really remembered was that she said, 'You were something greater in another universe.' It was not frightening, but instead was a very pleasant experience." He had several after that, mostly journeying back to look in on someone at home, his brother or friends. His dreams became more real, more vivid. They were becoming more powerful. It seemed like here I couldn't communicate with people the way I could over there. The words were so inadequate in expressing things because I wasn't a very expressive person to begin with. And when I was back in this plane I always felt so restricted and cut off from people. I mean, over there, it's total. A thought is received and felt totally. You know all of the nuances and everything that go with that thought. And here, words express such a small portion of the whole thought. One dream that I had was like seeing this. We look at dreams in our awakened state here, but in that dream I was aware of seeing this. Death in a needle, 83, plain from that perspective. And it was not even black and white, but just gray. It was like this was so shallow compared to the depth of realism that is on the other side. I felt really disappointed in this whole plane of existence. And I just didn't want to stay here. I began to read a lot about these things, and the more I found out, the more I wanted to leave here. The idea of suicide was not entirely new to him. It had come into his thoughts several times during his life, but only in passing, never as anything to be taken seriously. But now his periodical depressions are becoming more frequent and lasting longer. He described it as, used a vague kind of haunting feeling. Like this life, it's amusing and can be very trying and frustrating, but it really didn't hit me like this is where I'm at, where this is my home. I've never felt like this was home to me. Instead he began to feel a longing, an odd type of homesickness for this other plane that he had been allowed to glimpse. Since none of it made any sense, confusion and depression became his companion. During this time he decided to return home to pick up his motorcycle. He had everything going for him. He shared an apartment with his sister, and had a very good, responsible job in a management position over several other workers. He did not lack any of the creature comforts which we consider to be necessary to our lives. But it was not enough. He thought the trip home would make him feel better, but the depression was still present. His twin brother decided to return with him as he hauled the motorcycle back to California. No one in his family was aware of anything being different. Phil had always been quiet and moody. But as he loaded up his belongings, he picked up an unusual object, a hypodermic needle that his family used to give their animals shots. He stuck it into his suitcase, giving himself the excuse that he might have a use for it someday. This demonstrated that some part of his being was searching for a method of suicide and preparing a way, even without him being consciously aware of it. There was something about California. He felt so isolated and cut off out there. Even in a crowd he felt alone. When he returned there, the depression became stronger until it was all-possessing and encompassing. Even the presence of his brother and sister made no difference. The feeling of being out of place, of something not being right, was gradually getting worse. It was always there, but before it was never something that I felt like I couldn't handle. It wasn't a, 84, the keepers of the garden, constant thing. I'm a very moody person. I feel my moods very intensely. For no reason I would just start feeling very blue and melancholy. But at that time I was feeling it especially strong out there in California. It was all of that tied together and the depression, and I decided that I really just wanted to go over to the other side and stay. That I had lived enough life and had seen enough that I was ready to call it quits. He went to work that day, but he began to feel very emotionally drained, very depressed and drawn out. He knew he couldn't do anything at work, he didn't want to do anything at work. He made the excuse that he was sick so he could take off and go home. It was nothing physical, it was all emotional and mental, but he really wasn't feeling well at all. At home, the plan that had been forming in the back of his mind began to surface. He found the shot needle and after rummaging around in the kitchen, he found a bottle of PGA, pure grain alcohol, a very high alcoholic content whiskey. He filled a pill bottle with the whiskey and stuffed it and the needle in his pocket. Phil rode aimlessly on his motorcycle with his mind only occupied with his plan. I've heard of people doing it in a very flashy way, like jumping off of a building with a big crowd and all that. I didn't want anybody around. I thought that it was a very private thing that I wanted to do, and I was looking for a very isolated spot to do it in. I was serious about it. I'd made up my mind that I had had enough. I was just tired of living. Just tired, period. He really had no idea where he was going, until he came across a small winding, overgrown path that led down to the beach. There was a chain across the entrance and just barely room to slip his bike through. The path was so narrow that it would have been impassable for a car. It led to an abandoned group of cottages in an isolated cove. Years ago it had probably been a summer resort, but now it was just 12 small cabins that had become dilapidated and were rotting away. The cove was surrounded on three sides by high bluffs, and on the fourth was a very clean, sandy beach. The only entrance was the narrow winding path. The setting was perfect, complete isolation, no other living soul. He would be alone with his thoughts and his purpose. For a while he lazily explored the deserted cabins, strolled along the beach, skipped stones into the surf and just enjoyed the sun. But the haunting reason for his being there would not lay dormant. It, death in a needle, 85, resurfaced and his mind kept returning to his plan. He told me resolutely, I got the vial out, and loaded up the syringe with the whiskey. I sat down on the sand, staring at the needle and thought about it for a while. I wanted to be sure if that was what I wanted to do. I didn't want to feel like I was being pressured or, for some reason, I was doing this wrong. I decided I had the place and the stuff to do it with, and if I was going to do it, there would never be a better time. I was very firmly committed to going through with it. Some people have said that injecting alcohol into the vein might not be enough to kill. Others have said that it depended upon the strength of the alcohol, the amount injected and the body weight of the person and other variables. So this point is debatable. Phil said it never occurred to him that it would not work. He never even considered that possibility. I believe the important thing is that he had made a commitment to kill himself. The method, although unusual, is not the important issue. He had picked an isolated spot, so isolated Fathi's body probably wouldn't have even been discovered for a long time. The fact that there was no one around to stop him showed how serious he was about it. No, the only way he could be stopped from taking his own life would be if something other than a human, physical agency were to take a hand. I put the needle in a vein in my arm and had my thumb on the plunger. He paused as he remembered the event. And then I thought of my brother, my twin brother, and that's really what stopped me. I thought I had considered everything, all the possibilities and weighed all the pros and cons. But suddenly I saw my brother's face. It wasn't any particular thought. It was just thinking of Paul and whether I really wanted to leave him or not. Whether I could do that to him. What would he think of me and how would he feel afterward? And so, I pulled the needle out. I looked at it and I felt shame and disgust. I felt like I had betrayed myself somehow by even going that far. And I threw it all, both of them, the vial and the needle, out into the ocean. Phil felt cleansed, relieved, somehow reborn. But this was not the end of that story. When he returned to his sister's apartment, he found out that another drama had been played out a few miles away on that same beach at the exact same time that he made his life or death decision. His brother, Paul, had been scuba diving and had gotten caught in a riptide. He was being pulled under and was drowning. Then, 86, the keepers of the garden, by some miracle he could never explain, he was barely able to climb out of the surf where he collapsed on the beach in exhaustion. Was it coincidence? Phil does not think so. He said, I truly feel that if I had decided to go ahead and leave, that he would have drowned too. But I don't know. It could have been the other way around. Maybe I was putting myself in a situation to be ready in case he drowned. We've been very close, being twins and all, but we have never really been all that psychically connected. It's like we had both gone all the way to the very boundaries and turned back at the same time. Coincidence? Who knows? There is one theory that identical twins are parts of the same soul. I have learned through my work that before entering into a life, certain contracts and commitments are made with other people, especially those within a family group. They may have agreed to stay here only as long as each mutually wanted to do so. Whatever it was, it had a definite influence in changing Phil's mind about leaving this life. Another strange experience happened that night. Another incident to cap off a very unusual day. When he went to bed, he had a very powerful out-of-body experience. I came up out of bed, saw myself and went up through the sky and even up way past the earth. I remember looking back and seeing the earth behind me growing very small. And then I don't remember any more. But I can remember waking up and I knew that I had been somewhere. It was like I had taken my full consciousness somewhere else. Whatever occurred that night, I knew then that I had to stay. I don't remember what happened out there, but I knew that it wasn't time to leave, and that I shouldn't make myself leave. When my time is up, it'll happen. I've never really felt that I have some particular mission or goal in life, other than just being here and doing whatever I'm doing at the time. I feel like I'm supposed to just be here. There's no doubt that just knowing about these other planes enriches this life and helps in dealing with it. But yet at the same time you're acutely aware of the shortcomings of this life. It pulls you up by the bootstrings and forces you to become more responsible. Once I made that decision to stay here, I had to accept this life with all its shortcomings, this plane of existence. So, in that respect, I'm very glad that I did what I did. That I came that close. I thought that Phil was making an important point. There must be other people who have the same kind of feelings. He said he never suspected that he was any different than anyone else. He just, death in a needle, 87, felt uncomfortable most of his life. Finding out he was alien was a surprise, but not a shock, because he felt it helped explain his life and maybe at last he could understand why he was living here at this time. It would appear that if imprinting is a fact, then it is not a foolproof system. There must be many others who have committed suicide that could not be traced to any traumatic event in their life but simply because of these vague, out-of-place feelings. Like Phil, they could not understand these emotions well enough to describe their disease to someone. This may be more common than we think. These sessions had been full of surprises for me. But if Phil was gaining insight and help from them, then they were important. Chapter L0. The breakthrough to that these spires. My work with Phil was progressing quite well and each session held many surprises. I had never worked with a subject who regressed in the manner that Phil did. My best work had always been with somnambulists, the type of subject who can totally transform themselves into the past life personality and remember nothing upon awakening. Their conscious minds are completely suppressed, they are totally immersed in the past personality and time period and nothing else, especially the life they are currently living, exists for them. My work with Phil had been unusual because he was able to disassociate his conscious mind to a remarkable degree and answer questions objectively in the manner of a somnambulist, but the trance state was not absolute and he could still relate to his present life and draw upon his conscious experiences for comparative information and analogies. He remembered a great deal of what was going on during the session, whereas a somnambulist remembers virtually nothing. This type of hypnotic trance where information comes through a vehicle, body, as though directed from another entity or group of entities has become known as channeling. I had heard of it, but this was my first personal experience with it. I asked Phil what he felt when this was occurring. Do you feel like you are being pushed aside and merely watching with no control over what is being said? No, he answered after pondering the question and trying to think how to explain. That wouldn't be accurate. What I feel like when this is happening is not that I'm being pushed aside, but that I'm being expanded. My awareness is being expanded, and yet 88, the breakthrough to the three spires, 89, centralized. So that I'm tuning in very closely to these impressions that are being given to me, and then I interpret from a concept to spoken words. I've noticed that my speech pattern is different when I'm doing this. It's like I don't have to stop and think what I'm going to say because it's all already there. It's given to me in a lump sum and all I have to do is to interpret the concept that's being given. In that respect it makes it a lot easier than normal speech. Because you don't have to stop and think about words to use, or you don't have to think of the concept that you want to say. All you've got to do is find the proper words. It seems to be a very spontaneous thing. I don't believe I could make it happen. There's something else, another process at work here. But when it's happening I can only interpret the things that are in my vocabulary, my life's experiences and my familiarity with words in the English language. I believe it's much more complicated than people think it is. Do you ever feel that this is only coming from your imagination? In the beginning, I wondered about that a lot, because I have a very vivid imagination. All the while I was seeing it, I was questioning whether this was imagination or a dream or just something that I was making up to satisfy your wanting to know something. But if that were the case, why would you bring up scenes that you didn't feel comfortable with and didn't want to explore? I didn't even think of that, it never occurred to me. I was just questioning where it was coming from. I feel it would be very easy to give an entirely different interpretation and embellish if I wanted to. But for some reason I can't do that. It's as though I must interpret as accurately as possible what I am seeing. I couldn't change it and inject my fantasies even if I wanted to. It doesn't work that way. There seems to be a very slight difference between what this is and what imagination is. It's very difficult to tell if you're imagining or creating this in your own mind or if it's being spontaneously produced. But with practice you can tell when it's being spontaneously produced. I don't think there's any way I could describe it with words. It's just that when someone starts experiencing it, with trial and error you begin to feel the very, very subtle difference between the two. It's a matter of really letting go. I don't know how else to describe that. But it's like just trusting what it is and not trying to rationalize anything, just saving what I'm seeing. And let it come out without trying to offer any rationalizations or justifications or anything like that. You have to just go with it and just trust it. 90. The keepers of the garden. Yes, I would think that if you were imagining, you would have more control over it and be able to mold it into what you wanted to see, like when you were having a daydream. It was obvious from his description that he was certain this information was not coming from his own imagination but from somewhere else, a somewhere that he did not have control over. He also said that when he was shown a scene, there was a great deal more in it than he could relate to me, a vast amount of detail that he did not tell me about. He felt he could only answer my questions literally. He often wanted to volunteer information about what he was seeing, but if I did not ask the proper question, the answers would not come forth. I believe this also shows that his imagination is not at work, or he would want to embellish and embroider everything he told me. This proved to me something that I have known for a long time, that the entire process rests on the questioner. The right question must be asked to obtain the right answer, and thus the type of questions which are asked become extremely important in the case of regressive hypnotic research. Questioning becomes an art. I also suspected one reason Phil behaved differently from any other subject I had worked with to this point was because he was a different type of soul energy, one from the stars and other dimensions and not primarily of this earth. Maybe this was one reason he would not allow his conscious mind to become detached completely. Each session was allowing the other energy to become stronger and more memories were being awakened, both to his surprise and mine. Phil was also becoming more intuitive and psychic in his everyday life. I don't know how long we would have gone along getting the type of otherworldly information in the past chapters, but again, something unusual happened. My friend, Harriet, a fellow hypnotist who had worked with me on several occasions in my regression work, was present during this session. I was always aware that her energy somehow added the significant something that was missing. Good and strange things have always happened when she attends a session. She is like a battery, supplying extra energy for both me and the subject to draw upon. As the session began, the additional something that her presence contributes worked well. Maybe a little too well, for the extra boost caused Phil to break through to a very emotional scene. As the elevator door opened, he saw three towers or spires. He described them as tall, smooth-sided and pointed, standing side by side. The breakthrough to the three spires, 91, were arranged in graduated sizes with the taller one on the right, see drawing. I did not immediately realize the significance of what he was describing until I noticed tears had begun to flow from his eyes. He had never shown any emotion in regression before, and this is always a sure sign that something of importance has been encountered. But what could there be about three spires that could cause an emotional reaction? He spoke the next words with great feeling in a quivering voice. This is home. This is my home. The words sent chills through me. This was definitely something very important to him. I asked for a description and hoped he could reply in spite of the feelings that were welling up inside him. I'm looking from a distance across a green field at the towers. They're by themselves. They're a monument to this civilization. His voice bore no resemblance to Phil's normal voice. It was the voice of someone who had come home once again from a long, long journey. I was hoping to talk him past the emotion so he could explain why this place was affecting him so much. This is a monument? His voice quivered and he had difficulty forming the words. This is more than a monument, it's an antenna of sorts. This is a focal point for planetary communications from this planet. This is the focal point for me, for what I would focus on for this planet. I still could not understand what he was trying to say. Why were the three spires so important? This is my home. This is where I... His voice broke down. He was crying and obviously experiencing something very significant. Later when he awakened he said he felt such a strong rush of love and longing for this place that it overwhelmed him. He knew beyond a doubt that he had returned home, and the word never had such a beautiful meaning. He knew it was his true home and that subconsciously he had missed it very badly. In a rush of intuitive knowledge he knew why he had always felt so out, 92. The Keepers, the of Garden. The Breakthrough to the Three Spires, 93. Of Place. Earth was not his true home, but instead this strange planet with the three spires. The breakthrough for him was tremendous. D. Do feel like talking about it, or do you anto remove yourself from it? P. I would like to experience it. It's just difficult to talk about. I always give the subject this alternative when they encounter something traumatic. They can experience it or not, as they choose. If they feel uncomfortable or bothered by what they are seeing, I allow them to back off until they feel they can handle it comfortably. This had already worked successfully when Phil first encountered the scenes of other worlds. D. If it bothers you, you don't have to look at it. Do you think there is something to be learned from this, by talking about it? P. Very emotionally, it's a homecoming. It D. Fu won't to experience you as an observer, you can do it that way. He objected strongly. I would rather feel it. This was out of character for Phil. He had always had difficulty openly expressing his emotions. He tended to cover them up and would not even allow his family to see this side of him. This was strange behavior, and I decided to proceed with caution and allow him to experience this since it seemed to be very important to him. But at any sign that he could not handle this strange place, I would have immediately removed him from the situation. D. If you feel you want to talk about it, that is good. It must have a reason. P. I'll just explain what it means to me. You can make of it what you want. This is. His voice broke down again. I gave comforting suggestions. He began to breathe heavily as though he was trying to hold back deep feelings and not cry openly again. I told him it was good to talk about things and get them out and try to understand them. P. Still sobbing. I'll be okay. Somehow I had to get him into an objective position removed from the emotions. 94. The Keepers of the Garden. D. Were you happy there? Is that why it's a special place? P. Yes. Sobbing the words, I've missed this place intensely for a long time. It was a wonderful hour of parting. But it was for the good of all. For me it's very important. This was and is my home. A planet where I or a place where I am a part of. D. I think we all feel that loneliness sometimes. We all have places like that that we miss. Is this the same place you we spoke of before? P. This is not a place you and I have touched on. This is my home. Every time he mentioned those words he became emotional. His feelings were intense. D. Is it a three-dimensional place? Yes. Is it in the same area as the other planet we talked about? P. Somewhat. D. Why don't you describe it to me that way you can be less emotional? P. Much like Earth. As I said before, I chose to be here because this planet Earth is similar to these other places I have been. It's possible to go to another planet which is or could be alien or different. D. That makes sense. You would want to stay in surroundings that were fairly familiar to you. P. The area where I'm speaking of is a plane, a green flat plane with the three spires. They're square, four-sided and rise to a sharp point. I'm not sure of the material. It's off-white, dull white. There is nothing else in the immediate area. They stand alone. D. You said it was an antenna, but it's also a monument? Do you know what it is a monument to? P. It has a symbology for the three evolutions of this race. Each evolution higher or more advanced than the previous. There will be a fourth added at a certain point as the next progression is made. So this is a monument to the progression of this race. D. They know when they have re-achieved point of evolution when they should build a monument? P. It's understood. It's intuitively known. D. Could you describe the people who live here? P. They are not physical three-dimensional sex creatures. The need for procreation is a physical aspect of incarnation. The necessity of it is obvious. In order to sustain the population, procreation or the breakthrough to the three sires, 95, mating is necessary. On this place it is not necessary because the physical bodies are not housing the soul energy. The energy exists without a physical body, therefore it is not necessary. This is an energy planet, a three-dimensional planet, but one which is inhabited by energies. This is an example of energy bonding, wherein energy forms create the environment in which they wish to or need to live, in order to sustain their purpose. This is simply a form of procreation.